Last class, I started telling about Majumdar Ghosh model. I briefly introduced it. And then today, I will complete it by pointing out some key insights that one can get from this very simple model. And then move on to another friendly model, AKLT model. And in fact, its genesis is very fascinating. That AKLT model came because of a paper by Duncan Haldane, which later got a Nobel Prize, about a quantum spin chain where topology makes a difference between spin half and the integer spin chain. That is the Nobel Prize winning work of Duncan Haldane. So, AKLT model was inspired by Duncan Haldane's work, and then it became exactly solvable, at least for the ground state. Then I will go one more step and talk about Kitaev model, which is again a very user-friendly model, which brings out many new insight of quantum phenomena in quantum matter. See, this is a thing that, in my opinion, we are entering into the quantum world. We are just, the doors are opening into the Hilbert space slowly. And there is bewildering rich variety of phenomena that's going on. So that's why, you know, these insights coming from these simple models are going to be extremely useful. So, I told about Majumdar Ghosh model. I said that you can rewrite. So, it's basically a model in which there are spin half moments on a lattice, and there is a nearest neighbor coupling J between two neighboring spin, and also a next nearest neighbor coupling which is exactly half the amount. So, this is a model. So, the Hamiltonian has a well-defined Hamiltonian, nearest neighbor coupling and next nearest neighbor coupling. It turns out if you don't have next nearest neighbor coupling, this problem is not easy to solve. That was solved by Bethe using Bethe ansatz. It has a fascinating ground state. The ground state, no long range order, because if you were to think about classical spins, you can immediately understand if J is positive, the ground state will be antiferromagnetically ordered. In order to minimize the energy, that the two vectors will be anti-parallel, then the energy will be least. Then, of course, they can point in any direction. So, that's a global rotation. And then when you make the spins, if you start from this as a vacuum, as a classical vacuum, and then introduce quantum fluctuations, then what you find is there will be reduction in the magnetization, the spins will quantum fluctuate. But Bethe showed that the quantum fluctuation is so strong, there is no sign of long-range order. Long-range order completely quantum melts. And it develops algebraic correlation. And further, later understanding of Bethe-Ansatz solution tells you that the excitations are nothing like spin waves, because we are all familiar with ferromagnet and antiferromagnet.
What are spin waves?
Spin waves, suppose I have ordered ferromagnet, then let me take ion. Then spins are pointing in all collectively in one direction and the ground state. Then I can imagine exciting them. Then what will happen? Suppose I have a direction which the spins are pointing, when I excite them, there will be Larmor precession of the spins, and that will propagate like a plane wave because I have a translation invariant system. So, these are all collective modes of interacting spins. They are called spin waves. Sorry, I should have given an introduction to it in one of my lectures. I took it for granted. So, like you have interacting atoms in a lattice, there are lattice vibrations, they are phonons, so they are quantized. Similarly, if you have interacting spins, if the spins point all in one direction, or like in an antiferromagnet, one sublattice in one direction, other in the opposite direction, that's a ground state. There can be collective motions, which can be described by classical dynamics, for example. Then when you go to quantum mechanics, they get quantized spin waves called magnons. So, these quantized spin excitations are called magnons, and they are very, very important. Now, there is a whole field of magnonics, using them as qubit for quantum computing. So, any excitations of condensed matter system, since they are quantum mechanical, they become very useful. And particularly when they are topological excitations, like the magnon I am talking about is not topological excitation. They are simple collective motions. It's a pity that I did not talk about spin waves at all, because I assumed that background, but anyway, okay. And it turns out, when you look at the spin wave excitations, as an excitation, as a quanta, they are bosons. And you may be surprised that when you solve the problem of XY chain, spin chain in one dimension, Emily must have told you that Jordan-Wigner transformation converts into free fermion problem. So, the excitations are fermions rather than bosons. So, there are a very interesting quantum physics coming here, which is changing the statistics of objects. So, we will get a glimpse of all that through this model. So, okay. So, and also yesterday I said that this model has a very simple ground state, which I can write down, in which spins, alternate spins are exchange coupled into a spin singlet state. This is a state of this spin singlet. Similarly, this is a state of this singlet. Then it is a direct product. This is the Majumdar-Ghosh ground state. I intuitively told you how to rationalize it. Then, not rationalize it, what you do is you rewrite it as SA plus SA plus 1 plus SA plus 2. Whole square plus some constant or minus some constant can be just rewritten. Then, since the sum, it is a sum of positive definite operators, the minimum energy corresponds to least value of every square. And every square is represents sum of three spins, three spin half objects. And this, when you have a sum of three spin half objects, the least value of spin is half. So, somehow these three spins should become combined to form a half, and that is what is happening in this state. For example, if you look at these three spins, these two spins are definitely spin 0, whereas this fellow is quantum fluctuating. So, if I look at this circle, the total spin is definitely spin half. It may be quantum fluctuating, but the total spin value of this cluster is half, as given by this wave function. So, it satisfies the minimum energy criteria, and you can also show that by acting with this Hamiltonian, that it is an eigenstate. I will leave it as an exercise. So, this is what Majumdar discovered back in 1970s. Then the kind of consequence it has is very profound. So, now let me take this. So, and also I told you that there are two ground states. So that is, if it takes 1, 2, 3 and 4, 5 and so on. Here I pair 3, 2 and 3, 4 and 5. So, these are all two degenerate ground states. In particular, if I have an even number of spins forming a circle, I can have two ground states. They are degenerate. Okay. Now, let me look at the ground state and think about possible excitations. Because Majumdar found he can only write down the ground state wave function. He cannot write down the exact excited eigenstate. But let us use physics and find out what kind of eigenstates will be there. For example, I can imagine exciting this singlet into a triplet state. That will definitely cost energy, because these two spins are very happy because of singlet coupling. Now, I am exciting into the triplet, so it is a high energy state. Then quantum fluctuations, what will happen? It will may delocalize them. Like when I put a particle, like, you know, in a ferromagnet, that is what happens. Suppose I have a ferromagnet, then in this ground state, then I flip one spin. Then it turns out this has higher energy, but then this is not an eigenstate. So, the eigenstate is represented by that is what I have to do is I have to flip this spin at the site I and then coherently superpose this excitation everywhere with phase factor. So, this says it is a spin flip which is carrying a momentum q and a spin quantum number 1. Because I have flipped a spin, the SZ value has changed by 1. So this is a spin wave, and it satisfies Bloch's theory because I have a Hamiltonian, which is translation invariant. So these are all Bloch states which are propagating. So I can calculate the energy of this as a function of Q. For a ferromagnet, you find the energy as due to excitation. You can exactly show has this form. It is quadratic. So these are all called Goldstone modes. Okay. Now, if I, inspired by this picture of creating a spin flip and forming a Bloch state, what can I do here? I can imagine converting the spin, the pair into a striplet. Okay. So then what I will do is, I will imagine an excitation in which I have made these two spins into a striplet state. Then of course, I have a translation invariant system. What I have to do is, I have to coherently superpose this over all pairs and then with a phase factor. But then it turns out this is not an eigenstate, because if you act with the Hamiltonian operator, it mixes with the other state. But however, when you construct real eigenstate using quantum mechanics and, you know, corrections and so on, this thing spread and something more interesting happens. What happens is, as you create this state as a function of time, suppose, you know, I do the following. I created this, like, it's like a wave packet state. I have created an excitation. Then what I do? I evolve it in time, which Majumdar Ghosh Hamiltonian. I call it a state. Then what, something remarkable happens. What happens is, it turns out the two unpaired spins, they don't like to be together, they move away. So I have a situation after with very high probability I get a state which is like this. So I created a spin. So the quantum number has not changed. I have created a spin one state, but however, the spin one state would like to be separate as two spin half states. So this is quantum number fractionalization, which is at the heart of condensed matter physics activity. So what I did was, I created a spin one excitation. The dynamics and kinematics of the problem forces me to move away. This is nothing but the domain wall that I talked about at some point. Suppose I have created this spin flip, then you can imagine this to be two domain wall. So essentially what happens is, so a single spin flip breaks apart it into two domain walls. So here it is happening in a quantum mechanical way in this configuration. So this is the very important issue of quantum number fractionization. So this is already illustrated in the simple model as approximate eigenstate. I have not completely shown it because it's not exactly solvable, but there are models later constructed where you can show it exactly. So I hope I have conveyed the important point to you that this simple looking model, whose ground state we know, tells us what is going to be the nature of excitations. The nature of excitations is going to be like this, and then which is unstable, it breaks into two. So this is called quantum number fractionalization.
Could you explain whether this has anything to do with deconfinement?
Anything to do with?
Deconfinement.
You can say that, yeah. In fact, that's a very important point. So that's a very good point. So for example, you know, if you take interacting electron system like metal copper, you have a spin for an electron and also a charge. So they are together. But imagine a situation in which spins and charges are deconfined. They are confined by kinematics because they are, but it turns out you can organize many body Hilbert space in such a way, locally you have a charge, no spin, and locally you have a spin and no charge. So this is deconfined. In fact, this is called spin charge deconfinement or a decoupling. So, and what is interesting is, this is again a very important point. Here, this deconfinement and these spins and charges emerge as topological excitations. They are not put by hand. Whereas when you talk about deconfinement in quark physics or in quark gluon or in high energy physics, you have color degree of freedom. They combine into color singlet. They are so strongly bound, so you talk about confinement and deconfinement. Here, we have no, the underlying degrees of freedoms are spins. Then you have spin 1 excitations, which separate it into emergent degree of freedom, which carry spin half moment and happily move around. And in fact, if I come here and do the following, yeah, since I am a condensed matter physicist, now I do the following experiment. I shine light on this and remove this electron from here. I kick it out. Then what I will be then left with one electron and force a spin to be, because originally there were two electrons forming a singlet. I remove this electron and may take it to infinity. Then what I am left with is a charge, you will agree, because I started with a neutral chain, I have removed an electron, so I have a background charge, which is E plus, and I have a spin. Now, if you follow the same logic in this problem, what you will find is a remarkable phenomena that after some time, the charge will be moving alone and spin will be moving. So, this is something for an observer look very strange, because my constituent degree of freedoms of electrons which carry spin and charge. But I have organized Hilbert space, organized states such that at the end of the day, I am having a missing charge, missing electron which is called E plus, and then its spin partner somewhere else. So, this is called a spin charge decoupling. So, you have emergent degree of freedom and emergent deconfinement. It is not that you have broke the electron apart into two pieces with spin and charge, but things are organized in such a way, in this way. This has even more profound consequences or profound exhibition in quantum Hall effect. You are all familiar with, heard the name fraction quantum Hall effect. So again, I had no time to go into that, where such a thing happens in a dramatic way. So, you start with electrons living in a two-dimensional world, apply a very strong magnetic field. Under some condition, the excitations carry fractional charge, even though the constituent degree of freedoms are electrons. They carry integer charge. But they here, how did it happen? The Hamiltonian helped me to organize a state in this fashion. Then immediately it tells me the nature of low excitation can be like this. So, by quantum entanglement and organization of states in Hilbert space, I have separated locally charges and spins. So, this is what happens in Laughlin's fractional quantum Hall effect.
So, you're kind of saying the physical particles are still electrons.
Exactly. But the emergent objects are.
The quasi-particles.
And they're correct. Exactly. So, they are quasi-particles. That is the right word I should have used. They are quasi-particles. They may not be as neat as the way I have defined. There may be quantum fluctuations. But the fact is, their charge is sharp, E, and their spin is sharp. It may be quantum fluctuating. So, this is at the heart of quantum number fractionization. In fact, to the extent inspired by some development in RVB theory, Zhao Gang Wen wrote a very beautiful paper many years ago saying, in quantum electrodynamics, electrons and quarks could be emergent degree of freedom, because you may have start with some fundamental particle, but because of interaction, you may have solitons which carry charge 1/3. So, there are views like that. Similarly, gauge fields, U1 gauge fields that you see in electromagnetism can be emergent gauge fields of some interacting system. So, that is a remarkable thing about emergence. You start with very simple things, and then what emerges are surprises, many, many surprises, including possibility of gauge fields, fractional charges, and quantum number fractionization, and so on. And the next step is so-called anions. These objects will be unusual statistics. They are neither fermions nor bosons, anions, Fibonacci anions, non-abelian anions. All these things happen in condensed matter context. Okay. So, this simple model of Majumdar and Ghosh exemplifies with hindsight this basic phenomena. So, I thought I will discuss. Okay, good. Now, next one important thing which I should have mentioned, I will, before I go to AKLT model, I will mention that. You notice that here, if you think about this as classical spins, there is a notion of frustration. Because if I think about this spin chain, this interaction tells me, tells two neighbors to be antiparallel. Whereas it's coupling with the next neighbor, next nearest neighbor tells me that you be antiparallel to me. So you notice that because of this, you cannot organize spins in a way in which everybody is happy. There will be always some unhappiness. This is very beautifully explained with the example of four spins and three spins on a lattice. Imagine I have four spins which are antiferromagnetically coupled. Then you will all agree with me, because of the antiferromagnetic coupling, this is a ground state configuration. Because two spins are antiparallel, every pair is happy. So the exchange interaction is minimized for every pair. I'm talking about simple Ising coupling. That is, the coupling is between two spins is involves J and Z component alone. But let me, so then there is also another state which is a globally flipped spin. That is, this is degenerate to another state in which the spins are down. So they are degenerate. So this is a global chain. So there is only twofold degeneracy. But now let me put three spins and let them interact antiferromagnetically. And you can immediately find out, this has very interesting consequence. I put this spin up, then I put the left neighbor down. Then I don't know what to do here. Because if I put this spin up, this fellow will be happy, but this pair will be unhappy. So if I put him down, he will be happy, he will be unhappy. So this is called frustration. In fact, the name was introduced by Phil Anderson many, many years ago. So there are, because of the geometry, the spins don't know what to do. So now we notice the degeneracy of the ground state is fourfold. Here, in the case of four spins, the degeneracy was only twofold. Now I can imagine this and distributing the frustration in three possible ways. That is, this is one state. This is another state in which I put this bond as double bond as unhappy bond. Then I can immediately imagine a state in which all the spins are flipped like this. So there are six-fold degeneracy. So you notice that because of geometric frustration, I have more degeneracy. Now it's here quantum mechanics. Now what does quantum mechanics do? Quantum mechanics tries to lift degeneracies because I have six-fold degeneracy. Now I make the spins quantum mechanical and solve the quantum mechanical problem. And something beautiful emerges, again the question of emergence. So that is, I want to solve this problem of three spins coupled to each other by an antiferromagnetic coupling. This is a simple looking Hamiltonian. This already carries lots of interesting physics and emergence. So it turns out this problem can be solved exactly because it's just a three spin problem. Here I solve the problem for Ising spins where I have Pauli spin operator representing fluctuating spins. Then what you find is something amazing. Now the total Hilbert space dimension of this problem is 2 to the power of 3. That is 2 times 2 times 2. Now with some insight from Majumdar Ghosh model, I can rewrite it as times some constant. Because when I expand the square, I get S1 square. That is the square of Pauli spin operator, which is 1. So I can subtract it away. So I can rewrite it like this. Then the problem becomes very simple total angular momentum square of three spins. And you know, total angular momentum can be half or 3/2, when I have three spins. So that means the spectrum now becomes, so there are 16 states, sorry, 8 states, right? Sorry, 8 states, yeah. This is a spin 3/2 state, this is a spin half state. Now there are 2 degenerate spin half states. Now again something beautiful happens. Now this is where a beautiful work by identity by Wen, Wilczek and Zee they notice that this can be rewritten in terms of what is called chirality operator. Now you know that when you have vectors, 3 vectors, you can define dot product and cross product. So let me define a cross product between 2 vectors. So it's a vector. Okay. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the dot product of this with the first spin. So what I have is a scalar. What is remarkable is that this quantity, if you look at it, if you think about S as classical vectors, they talk about how the 3 vectors are handled. If suppose it's positive, then it say you say that the 3 vectors form a right-handed triad. If it is negative, they form a left-handed triad because the cross product in one case will be minus, another case it will be plus 1. So it corresponds to right-handed. And now what is remarkable is Wen, Wilczek and Zee found an identity in which they said that this is, by the way, called chi operator, chirality operator. So they showed it's very simple to show . So I leave it as an exercise. That is, even though I have 3 spin operators, I square them at the end of the day because they are all 2x2 matrices, Pauli spin operators. Pauli spin operators have obey very simple rules. They become bilinear. Okay, this is a very beautiful identity. Now you can use it to understand the degenerate states that I have gotten by solving this 3 state problem. So in this state what happens is the 3 spins quantum fluctuate keeping left-handed chirality, and here they quantum fluctuate keeping right-hand chirality. It will become very clear now when I write down what is the wave function of this. Suppose I want to write down what is eigenstate, because I am talking in words. Since this problem can be solved, it turns out the state in which the chirality is 1 in the spin basis looks like this. That is, in site 1 the spin is down, then in this state site 2 the spin gets down, then in the next state in site 3 the spin is down. Then there is an important phase factor which is 2 pi by 3 plus e to the power of 4 pi by 3. So this is the eigenstate. So what you find is a downspin is running around this triangle carrying an angular momentum of 1. So that means when you have frustration, the spins interact in such a way they develop spontaneous ground state current. So these 2 degenerate states corresponds to states in which there is a ground state spin current.
And you're saying that you can then further label these eigenstates again with the quantum number L depending on.
Exactly. So there is a degenerate state. So the next state will be minus, plus or minus. So the net spin of this is spin half pointing in one direction. But then the downspin is running around clockwise or counterclockwise. So there is a spin current. This has a profound consequence when you come to a bigger lattice. This is a type problem which already exemplifies a beautiful idea of emergence of this spin current. And incidentally, this spin current in the fancy language is called emergent gauge field, because there is a flux associated with A1 gauge fields and so on. Okay.
And you were saying this is when something
here?
Just the name that you wrote on the left.
This one?
At the very left of the board?
1, 2, 3.
At the name, at the left.
When we'll check Z?
When we'll check Z?
That's
Tony Z.
That's this model?
Yeah, they found this identity. In fact, in one of my papers, I called it as when we'll check Z identity, because I used it to go in the next step. So they simply observed this three spins coupled by nearest neighbor coupling on a triangular lattice can be rewritten in terms of the square of the three spin operator. And then it turns out you can show that, So what is interesting is even the quantum fluctuations of three spins in this limited Hilbert space produces you surprises. You have chirality and spin currents. And I, since I am mentioning all these things, I will just indicate that in fact there is a famous state by Kallmayr and Laughlin as a variational state for spins on a two-dimensional lattice called Kallmayr-Laughlin state, which is inspired by this, in which there is spontaneous ground state current, spin current. Okay, I just wanted to tell you some gist of what can happen. So, let me summarize. So, I started with Majumdar-Ghosh model, for which you can understand the ground state very clearly. You can show that these are D ground state and there are doubly degeneracy. And then I motivated that if you create excitations, which will be local triplet, when you do the calculation, they do not like to be close by, so they separate. And then the separated entity indicate quantum number fractionization. And then another example I showed that if you remove that electron, it indicates spin charge separation, in which you have a charge happily moving around and a spin happily moving separately. So this is called deconfinement. Even though the constituent degrees of freedom carry both spin and charge together, the emergent degree of freedom can look as if they are not. And this happens in dramatic way in quantum Hall effect, particularly in fractional quantum Hall effect, in which you get like Laughlin's one-third charge, the famous Nobel Prize winning work. So experimentally, in fact, when you do short noise experiment, when the quasi-particles pass through by some medium, by some junction, you do short noise measurement, what you find is the charge is E by 3 rather than E. So this is a non-trivial organization of many electron states in which excitations can look completely different from the constituent degree of freedom. So this is a repeated theme that you will come across. Excitations are very different from constituent degree of freedom. This is a message in quantum matter physics in the modern time, and the way that they are different can be in many, many ways. Okay. So this is, I think, I will close the Majumdar-Ghosh model here. Next, I will go to what is called AKLT model. It's another friendly model. This model, I will write down on the Hamiltonian and write down the eigenfunction, ground state eigenfunction, which is what the AKLT did. That AKLT is Affleck, Kennedy, Lieb and Tasaki. They are the authors. It's a famous paper. Now, what does this model exemplify? It is going to exemplify something called topological order. So it's an example of topological order. Second, again, quantum number fractionization. Okay. All these three will be beautifully illustrated in this model. And this model is playing a very important role in quantum computing, because some of these excitations have been proposed as good qubits by various people. So they are very, very important. But again, the thing is, constituent degrees of freedoms are spins, but what emerges are very fascinating objects. So now, all the while I was talking about spin half degree of freedom, now I'm going to talk about spin 1 degree of freedom. So spin 1 is something that occurs in nature. You know, you can have spin 1 excitations in a ferromagnet, you can have a spin 1 in a transition metal ion, spin 1 state, and the photon is supposed to have a spin 1, photon carries spin 1, and the graviton is supposed to have a spin 2, and so on. Okay. So this model involves local spin 1 objects, and they interact via antiferromagnetic coupling. Plus, it smells like Majumdar-Ghosh model, but there is no next nearest neighbor interaction, but nearest neighbor interaction. However, I have S dot S here. Here it's S dot S whole square. It's called biquadratic. Now, if you take a spin half object and write down S dot S whole square, you can show it's constant because of Pauli spin matrix property. Whereas for spin 1, this whole square is a different operator from here. So this is in general not solvable. For example, if you had an arbitrary j here, it's not solvable. When the coefficient here and here are 1/3 has relation, AKLT showed that it has an exact solution. Now let me write down the exact solution in terms of picture. The picture looks like this. You all know that a spin 1 object can be thought of as made up of 2 spin half object, provided you take care of spin 1 state, because or spin 0 state. Because if I think about addition of angular momentum, I have 2 spin half, they can add up to give me spin 0 or spin 1. So now what I am going to do is I am going to view for anticipating various things that this spin 1 is made up of 2 spin half object. But however, I will make sure that they don't produce spin 0 combination. How do I ensure? So what I do is I construct the following. That is, so these are all now called partons or quarks. Okay. This circle represents the site that I'm involved in. That is site I, I plus 1, I plus 2. I minus 1. So what I have done, I chose site I and then represent the spin there in terms of 2 spin half object, and then I want to make sure that in the wave function when I write down finally that these 2 spins never go to spin 0 state. I project out. Then it will be a faithful representation of my problem. What is remarkable is if this be the case, if you keep moving, what you will find is, like we had in polyacetylene, I can do this construction for spins, then I will have a problem at the end. Because I said that every pair, every spin is made up of 2 half objects, spin half objects. And here I have paired one fellow with the other, it's a singlet, this way, singlet. Then I am left with one fellow here. So now I am going to show, this is what they showed beautifully, that even though you start with the spin half chain, if you write down this ground state, this chain will have some freely hanging spin half moment. It's very counterintuitive. Even though the constituent degree of freedoms are spin 1, they so organize that you have a spin half at the end. Now I will explicitly show it. Now, having written down this, now how do I prove this? This is, can be proved by a construction called Schwinger-Boson construction. Basically, it is a statement that you can write spin 1 3-level system using two Schwinger bosons with a constraint. So, imagine in the same site I have two type of bosons denoted by operator A dagger AI and B dagger BI. So, imagine I have two set of oscillators A and B at every site. Then now this oscillator will have 0 occupancy 1, 2 infinite set of states. Then this oscillator also will have 0, 1, 2 and infinite set of states. So, the Hilbert space of these oscillators are infinity. But now I put a constraint, okay, I am going to say that I will use this oscillator and then remain in a subspace which satisfies this constraint that AI number operator of number of A boson plus number of B boson is always 2. Suppose I make this constraint, then it gives me little choice. What it tells is, it says I can have a state in which A boson has occupancy 1, which and B boson has occupancy 1, or A boson has occupancy 2, or B boson has occupancy 2, and anything else is not allowed. So, here what I have done is, I am writing the 2 boson state in terms of occupation number. So, here there is 1 boson in the A boson and 1 B boson. Similarly, here there are 2 A bosons and 1 B boson, no B boson, no B A boson and 2 B boson. So, that happily satisfies this constraint. Now, Schwinger showed, and it is very trivial to show, that if this be the case, you can write spin operators in terms of this operator, in terms of Schwinger boson operators, and then play with it, remembering always to do this constraint. So, I will not do that detail, but what I will show you is, I will write down the wave function for you by hand, which will satisfy this property nicely, and then hence a faithful. So, let me imagine I have a vacuum in which there is no oscillator, all the boson, no bosons, A or B type of boson. I create A boson at site I and B boson in the neighboring site, and then I create B boson at site I and A boson at site I plus 1 and take product. Now, you notice that this looks like singlet to me. So, if I think in terms of occupancy, this looks like 1 0 and 0 1. So, if I think about down as 0 and 1 as 1, so this looks like a singlet state, and that faithfully represents the singlet I have talked. So, what I have done is, I have taken A boson from site 1, B boson from site 1, and A boson from, and then pair them in a singlet fashion. So, what do? I create a pair of bosons and form a coherent superposition. So, here I have 1 A boson at site A I and 1 A boson at B boson at site I plus 1. A boson is absent, and the vice versa. Now, if you expand it, you will find this state I have constructed by hand always satisfies this constraint. Please check yourself. It is very straightforward to check.
Could you just give some intuition for how the A and B bosons map to the chain? Like, what is A and what is B?
Exactly. Yeah. I will. Yeah. So, for example, in this representation, how will I represent SIZ operator? It will be okay. Now let me. So, if I have a spin 1, what are the possible values of S? SZ, SZ 1, SZ 0, SZ minus 1. Now, I define SZ in terms of Schwinger boson numbers as A dagger A minus B dagger B. Now, let me evaluate this in this state. So, it is 2. So, I normalize it by divided by 2. So, when I express check this value in this state, I get 1. In this state, I get minus 1. Here, I get 0. So, there is a faithful representation of SZ operator as far as the values are concerned in terms of this. Then you may ask what is S plus ladder operator. Then it turns out what will ladder operator do? It will take you back and forth. For example, a ladder operator will flip. If I want to go up here, it will transform a boson into a B boson. It will be and things like that. And then you can convince yourself and show that they obey Pauli, the spin one commutation relation. Everything will be happy. So, this is a called Parton or Schwinger boson representation. Anticipating quantum number fractionalization, I am giving this representation. Then what is interesting is in this language, the wave function of AKLT has a very beautiful representation. So, every pair is a singlet, but the construction makes sure there is never departure from this occupancy. So, this is a very important point. You will have to check it to convince yourself. Okay. So, this was a beautiful construction. Now, as you keep doing it, as I said, you will be left with one Schwinger boson who is not paired, another Schwinger boson who is not paired.
Could you compare this a little bit to what we had in the first tutorial where we started off from the quantum Ising model? And then at the end also by these Majoranas found the...
Right, exactly. So, in the quantum Ising case, you had Majorana fermion at the end. So, this is simpler. You have simply spin half object at the end. So, there is a very deep similarity. In fact, when you remember the diagram that Emily showed you, you also pair not spin half object, but pair Majorana fermions. The picture looks very similar. In fact, you may remember the standard picture is like this. You say that every fermion at a site has a real part and imaginary part. I put the real part in the top row and imaginary part in the bottom row. And the interaction is such that this Majorana fermions gets paired. Then I am left with an unpaired Majorana fermion here and here. So, it is identical to that, except that here I am pairing spins. And historically, AKLT came first and then these things came later. Okay, this is very important. Now, okay, so it is a state. Now, I can calculate various things. It is very, very clear that here the spins are strongly quantum fluctuating. And you may like to know the representation of this in terms of real spin values. In fact, there is a representation. And that introduces to what is called matrix products. How many of you are familiar with matrix product states? Oh, wonderful. So, this is a beautiful example of matrix product state. So, what is a matrix product state? That in the ground state, what you do is, so you go to the basis in which the spins are in the eigen base, SZ basis. Suppose I have n spins. So, here S can value take 3 values, 1, 0, minus 1. And then there should be some amplitude for this, right? So, when I have a general ground state, it should be some over all possible values of A, plus minus 1, 0 for all, some over all, and then some coefficient. And matrix product it tells you it is going to be traced over a set of matrices, n matrices, which carries the dimension, maybe whatever it is, some index, which is this S1 is that. S2, Z and so on. This is a matrix, you are all familiar with it. So, you and the matrix dimension can be anything depending on the problem. And it turns out this, when you rewrite in matrix product state, the A matrix becomes just 2 by 2. So, the A matrix has to have a form for, so let me write it down, A matrix for the value s is in 1, minus 1, then A matrix for s is equal to 0. This corresponds to that's it. So you define A matrix which is a function of S. So that S can take 3 values. For S0 you have a like Pauli spin operator, S is sigma z. For S z you have plus and minus like ladder operator. That's it. So there is a there are nice review articles on this. If you look at Wikipedia, you'll find. So you can give a matrix product representation for AKLT model. And then there are consequences. Okay, this. Now, the next thing I wanted to tell you, is there any order in this thing? Because in the case of Majumdar-Ghosh model, you found that there is an order because the valence bonds or the singlet bonds are ordered like a solid. So, they can be in ordered in 2 ways. So, there is a periodicity of valence bond order. So, corresponding correlation functions will have long range because it, long range order is visible. Now, is there any such order in AKLT model? Turns out there is a very deep order which is called topological order. First, let me explain it in terms of picture and then go to the actual evaluation of that. So, you know, if I expand it, there are all configurations of SZ appear. For example, in site 1, SZ can be plus 1 or minus 1 or 0. So, let me pick up a random configuration in which I have 1, 0, 0, 0, minus 1, minus 1, 0, 1, minus 1, minus 1, and so on, right? This is at site 1. Now, it turns out, if you expand this state or look at the matrix product state, there is a beautiful order. Even though these 1s and minus 1 appear randomly, there is an order in sequence space. In the sense, suppose I have a configuration in which I have 1, I can have any number of zeros, it should be followed by a minus 1. Then I can have any number of zeros, should be followed by a plus 1. So that the totally, you know, because it's a paramagnetic state, the total SZ should be 0. That corresponds to having 1 minus 1, total number of 1 equal to total number of minus 1. But however, if I look at the configurations that are present in this waste, in this function, you will find the beautiful order. If I find one, with definiteness, I can say that the next one I will encounter will be minus 1. I can have 7 zeros, 8 zeros, any number of 0. So, there is order in sequence space. So, this is called a topological order. In fact, this order is captured by the following correlation function, which was discovered by, I think, Dean Ages, I forget the name, which is very important by for example, if I took it remains of Jordan Wigner string. That is, take 2 sites I and j and then put the corresponding, let us say, SZ operators at site I and j. Then in between you put a phase factor which carries all the spins that come in between. So, it is a string operator like Jordan Wigner string. It turns out this operator has long range order in the sense, as you find the expectation value of it in the ground state and make I and j farther and farther, it remains non-vanishing. So, this is a, so you will call it as a liquid because if you think about it, it's as a collection of charges. You have 0 charge here, you have positive charge and negative charge, but they always occur in sequence, in the correct sequence. So, this is a long range order. So, it, from that point of view, it's a non-trivially entangled state because already this matrix products representation tells you the nature of entanglement. This explicitly tells what is the Okay, so this is AKLT model. So it gives you an introduction or exposes to things to come, namely topological order, which are much more complicated in other systems. But this is a very simple way of, for example, taking this kind of idea, you can show that fractional quantum Hall effect, as given by Laughlin, can be written as a Bose condensed state. And that order parameter is a topological order parameter, which involves, instead of string, something everywhere, non-local. Yeah.
Was this the first example of a spin liquid? Because I'm guessing this is a spin
liquid. Yes. Okay. So I will say the first example of spin liquid is exact solution is Majumdar-Ghosh model, because there is no long-range spin correlation, because spins are quantum fluctuating. It's a liquid, even though it's made up of valence bond solid. So as far as spin is concerned,
what is the difference between those two words, spin liquid versus valence bond?
Okay, good. So in spin liquid, there is no long-range order of any time, because there is no spatial organization. The valence bonds are fluctuating. So the spin-spin correlation function typically decays exponentially in a spin liquid. Now, valence bond order, there is a spin liquid, but valence bonds are ordered. So it has some extra order. Whereas in the AKLT model, you can say it's a good spin liquid, spin one liquid, which has quantum number fractionization in this sense. Now, there is lots of excitement in this field in the recent time, because in addition to the ground state, people have found out some non-trivial excited states. They are called quantum scars. In fact, it's big field now. Moudgalya from Princeton, he was involved in it. And so they are all represented by matrix product states. And then they obey or disobey eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. So I'm not going to details of that. So this has become a playground for these very beautiful ideas of quantum scars, now which are being tested using Rydberg atom arrays and so on, PXP Hamiltonian. So it's a whole field. So all these things give you some clue about the richness of the Hilbert space when you see through this window. Okay. So this is, my God. So I have, time is up. So this is, now next lecture, that is Friday, today is Wednesday, yeah. I will do Kitaev model, the 2D Kitaev model, where again, you will find emergence of Majorana fermions, even though the constituent objects are simple spins, or you can think of the Swinger bosons, but emergent degrees of Majorana fermion and Z2 gauge fields, and all wonderful things that you can imagine are happening in Kitaev model. And I do not know if I have given lectures where I said that I will make students derive Kitaev model solution in 10 minutes. If you know Pauli spin operator algebra, and if you know how anti-commutation between fermion operators, these two are sufficient to give exact solution of Kitaev honeycomb lattice model in 10 minutes. I will try to do that next time. So this idea, so let me recapitulate. So I started with the AKLT model, and I said that it exemplifies quantum number fraction, even though I did not show it exactly, but the basic idea I tried to convey to you. Then I came to then I digressed a little bit about three spin sites, and then I talked about emergence of chirality or the spin current. Why I brought it in this context is, if you look at AKLT model, what you find is a lot of chirality fluctuations are there. Chiralities are emergent objects, but they do not undergo order. They are quantum fluctuating. So in that context, I brought. Then I came to AKLT model, which exemplifies the idea of quantum number fractionization. So in order to bring it out, you by hand, you convert the constituent spin. Imagine it's made up of two spin half objects. Then you have a constraint. Then these spin half objects that you put by hand emerges as quasi-particle excitations in a non-trivial way. Then I indicated the nature of hidden order, namely topological order. The order is in sequence space. And there are other topological, in fact, if I have time on Friday, I will tell about topological order in even, you know, this, probably the simplest spin model, namely Kitaev story code Hamiltonian, which is very well used in quantum computing and so on. So I will, that will be my last lecture tomorrow for this week. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
In the Shastri-Sutherland model?
Shastri-Sutherland, I'll have to leave it. Maybe I can tell Emily to discuss it in one of the. So Shastri-Sutherland model is a beautiful generalization of Kitaev. So, okay, since you asked this question, do you have time? I'll just flash it. So imagine you have a square lattice. Now Shastri and Sutherland, my good friends, ask the question, can I write down a model for which, spin model for which I know the ground state? And Shastri was the student of Majumdar. So in a model begets model, that was my title of one of my talk. So what you do is you take this model and add next nearest neighbor coupling along this, in this bond. So you talk to the square lattice Heisenberg model, antiferromagnetic coupling with neighbors. On top of that, add this next nearest neighbor coupling specific. For example, this also next nearest neighbor, but you do not have a coupling. Now you can show that once you write a Hamiltonian like this, you can do the trick of writing a sum of three spin square. Then the lattice that I have drawn becomes the ground state, provided the valence bonds are like this. So, yeah, this is a ground state, period. So these two spins form a singlet, these two spins form a singlet in the staggered way. This is a ground state, and Shastri and Sutherland wrote it down. Unfortunately, you can only write down the ground state, you can't write down the excited state. But what was remarked, when I remember, Shastri is a good friend of mine, I was making jokes with him, I told him, so what? But it's that nature must have smiled at me, my ignorance, because now there are compounds for which Shastri, Sutherland model Hamiltonian is very a good approximation. And there are surprises when you take Shastri, Sutherland model and apply magnetic field at low temperature, the system behaves in a completely different way. There are, for some magnetic field, it behaves like a quantum spin liquid with quantum number of fractionization and so on. So it, Shastri Sutherland model opened a door to the Hilbert space corner in which there are new worlds. So that is the 2D Shastri Sutherland model. In fact, now there are more, there was a student of Shastri, his name Brijesh Kumar, he has a model in three dimension. So another model begets another model. And then there are models by Roni Tomale and collaborators on more complicated lattices along the similar ideas. But then what is rich is everything has some special features. That's the richness of Hilbert space. Hilbert space is too big to comprehend what's going to come. Thank you.